Good evening. This is Life Rattle, the Story Show. I'm your host, Lori Callis. In honor of Father's Day, Life Rattle Program 1304 features two themed stories, Natalie Soulier's portrait of her grandpapa and Laura Lush's tribute to her father. Natalie Soulier was born in 1993 at the Royal Victoria Hospital in Barrie, Ontario. She often calls her parents the Pocahontas story. The uncanny union of Anglophone and Francophone teenagers who met on a Mont Saint-Anne ski hike. They moved to Innisfil Beach on Lake Simcoe, where Natalie spent hours sculpting mud in the garden. Saying goodbye to her high school sweetheart, Natalie left for Toronto to study history at university, hoping to one day curate. At a dead end and lost in the jazz scene, Natalie switched programs to pursue her true passion in editorial and technical writing. Natalie Soulier now lives in Toronto's Garden District. She takes breaks by painting on Sundays and watching Shane West on the WGN America show, Salem. Fresh, unexpected turns of phrase, peppered with French-Canadian twang, bring an almost musical quality to the writing of Natalie Soulier. The story we will hear tonight draws us into the world of a young girl and her grandpapa, where make-believe seeps into their lazy Sunday morning routine. Natalie blends snippets of a classic John Wayne film with the sometimes inexplicable behavior of a child and the affectionate banter between the girl and her grandfather to create a magical character study. Let's listen now as Natalie Soulier reads her story, Promise Me, Cowboy.
Promise Me, Cowboy, by Natalie Soulier. In the palm of December, I look up from the cold kitchen floor, where I sit on my pantouf, slippers, and smell roasted coffee in the still winter air. I drape my Winnie the Pooh nightgown over my pale, bare legs. Pepe twirls on his heels and waltzes to the counter with a bubbling pot of Joe. An old-time string band with a slow-stepping Spanish guitar, a whistle-rocking harmonica, and a looping country howl shoots a smile across my face. The Searchers begins. Pepe sways to the sounds coming from the coughing box television in the living room, down the narrow checkerboard hall. Morning. He raises his bushy eyebrows, rubs his round belly, and waits for my smile. Grandpapa, j'ai envie de manger. I'm hungry. I pick at the tile grout, feeling witty, switching from English to French. Oui. Pepe pours hot brown sludge into a chipped white mug. He blinks and eases a cup of coffee closer to his face. Pepe takes a slow sip. I watch the steam, a little Casper, wave over the rim. Pepe sets down the mug, cups water in his hand, and grooms his dark, loose curls over the sink with his fingers. He splashes water on his skin and clears his throat with a deep cough. Fricassé and fricasse potatoes? C'est bon? Pan chicken and potato pancakes. Good? His favorite actor, John Wayne, growls in the other room, where the empty leather couch faces the action. I'm giving the orders and you'll follow 'em, or we're splitting up right here and now. Knowing this part, I plug my ears. Revolvers blaze and bodies splatter like spaghetti slop flung to a wall. Yeehaw, I wail. I smack my lips. Pepe claims to have invented fricasse potatoes, a special, naughty word I can pronounce, and Meme disapproves of. I love fat breakfast and TV Sunday. I stretch my legs and kick the fridge, pry with my toes and kick again. I stare at Pepe's olive face. His eyes twinkle as he dries his thick fingers with the towel. In his gray cotton button-up, Pepe looks like John Wayne, sunny and timeless. "Come on, Blanketheads," John Wayne barks in a Texas accent to a band of feathered Comanche warriors. "What's a Blankethead?" I giggle. "It's bad thinking, Boo." "But it sounds funny," I say. "Yes, yes it does." The stretch and pucker of Pepe's mouth reminds me of an old and wise catfish. A brown spot shifts above his upper lip when he mumbles. Short, stiff hairs sprout from his chin, along his jaw, to his ear. The overgrowth hides the deep folds and lines on his face. He's my golden cowboy, minus the Wayne superstar necktie. Pepe swivels around, grips the counter, and straightens the coils on the stove. He bends his 6'3" frame like a teapot and peeks into the creaky chamber of the single-door oven. Pepe slaps down a saucepan, turns up the heat on the stove. It warms butter in the pan. I make a pistol with my hands and point at the cook. "Step aside." John Wayne sweeps the bungalow with a clog, 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 branding the dry earth with his spur-studded boots. "Bang! You're hit." I blow smoke off the invisible muzzle. "What is that? You're offering to make me breakfast?" Pepe pokes his head around and winks. "No." I cover my mouth with both hands and shake my head. "Okay, blonde bandit." Pepe wobbles on bad knees. He curses his arthritis. Pepe is a peg-leg hero. Slightly tipsy, off-balance-looking, rough, tough, and rugged. I imagine a camel cigarette in his mouth, bouncing on the lower lip, as he rides his horse across the Arizona desert. "Savages!" another cowboy screams. More spaghetti. "Yow!" I yelp. "Easy, Boo. Mummy is asleep," Pepe chuckles. He buries his head in the fridge to fiddle and stack and clank the meats and the vegetables. I cluck like a chicken as he bastes the poultry breast. The fried onions sizzle and smoke. The scent of crackling, crisp chicken fills the room. "Frick-ass potatoes, last up." Pepe lassos black pepper from the overhead spice rack with the flick of his wrist. "You got a warrant?" John Wayne jumps back into the kitchen. "What's a warrant?" I ask. "It's like a promise," Pepe says. "Do promises mean forever?" I nudge my face up and angle it like a dog to the sound of a radio. Hands on waist, Pepe pauses and sniffs. "Depends, kiddo. Some may be broken." "Baloney," I twist my index finger in the air. Pepe pulls back the thin, peach curtains above the tap. He pops open the window and picks me up, slinging me over his shoulder like a Siamese cat. A leafless cherry tree stands frozen in the center of the square-fenced yard. "You, chicken, always climb that tree." "Why?" he says. "Because you never stop watching me climb." Pepe stares out the window. I tap his drooping shoulder. I tug his furry chin. "Yes?" he winces. "Why don't you live in the Wild West like John Wayne?" I say in my best Texas drawl. "Because I couldn't be with you." Pepe's fingers flutter over my shoulder and out into the white, pillowy distance. "Grandpapa, je t'adore." "I know." Pepe shimmies and lifts me high and spins me around. "Are you a cowboy?" I stretch my voice low and sweet. Pepe puts me down. He throws some yellow grit into the pan. "Why don't you finish the job?" John Wayne taunts from the living room. I smell fried, mealy starch. I watch Pepe fork and roll the potato pancakes. "Are you a cowboy?" I ask again. "I will tell you someday, but Mammy made me promise not to just yet." "It's okay, Pepe. You can tell me. Some promises are meant to be broken." "Fine, I'm a cowboy, all right?" He winks and kisses my cheek. The house warms with the whiff of frick-ass potatoes. I take my first bite.
That was Promise Me, Cowboy, written and read by Natalie Soulier. Tonight's second reader, Laura Lush, is a poet who has recently returned to prose. One noun and one verb at a time, she says. Passionate about rural life, Laura lives with her son Jack in Guelph and commutes to Toronto, where she teaches academic English and creative writing. Laura's recently published Swing Beam, My Father's Story of Life on the Farm and the Barns He Loved and Lost, is a breathtaking collection of prose, poetry, and photographs. Her story tonight comes from that collection. The lyricism of her story reveals Laura's poetic roots. In this exquisite tribute, the circuit of a man's life unfolds. From birth onward, we follow his spectacular accomplishments, his times of joy and sorrow, and devastating heartbreak. We see his hilarious character quirks, his fierce determination, and his passionately held beliefs that are sometimes overcome by the depth of his love for family. Let's listen now as Laura Lush reads A Man and a Dog.
A Man and a Dog by Laura Lush. He weighs 5 pounds, 6 ounces. Tiny hands and feet, a mouth that can't latch onto his mother's breast. She feeds him formula and special vitamins from a dropper and grows him to 5'6". He wants to play football, but he's too small. Wants to become a fighter pilot, but he's too young. He runs instead. He runs every day in army boots, a white peaked cap, red shorts, and a maple leaf tank top. He runs from St. George to Brantford, from Hamilton to Toronto. He runs around the bay in Burlington. He runs the hills of Boston and New York, the heat of Mexico City, the rain and fog of Vancouver. He collects trophies and ribbons, lunches with the Duke of Edinburgh. He dates girls taller than him, richer than him. He courts well, always opens the door, pays for dinner, and brings flowers. He spends all his food vouchers on a Danish girl he meets on the train to the British Empire Games in Vancouver. He talks about the first time he met his wife, how he took her on the roller coaster at the exhibition, not once but twice, how she threw up in his white peaked cap, how she knocked his socks off, her New York clothes, how lucky he was, this farm boy from St. George. He says, "Well, I'll be son of a gun," plays the ukulele, the gut bucket, sings the first 8 bars of Tommy Dorsey's I Can't Get Started every Valentine's Day. He names his children with care, Barbara after his sister, Laura after the song, Kurt after a southern boy from South Carolina who gave him his dog tags so he could feel for himself the weight of the Second World War around his neck. He can parse plants, differentiate a good bale of hay from a bad one, oats from wheat. He loves spring and summer, winter and fall. He packs up his wife and kids every year and takes them to campsites in northern Ontario. He shows them how to bait a hook, cast a line, make the lure dance underwater, when to throw back a fish. He takes them to PEI Expo, finds a tent blowing down a street in Lethbridge. He sinks his boat off a Muskoka dock, water skis into an island, lands on a cow when skydiving. He spends hours in his barns, inhales the sweet, thick aroma of silage, runs his hands up and down the roughened hand-hewn beams, shoots rats buried in feed bags, watches the steamy breath of his cows huddled in the lower barn, the whip and run of his horses across the field, walks the concession fields, pauses so he can watch the rhythmic line of his barns rising out of the landscape. He raises birds, turkeys, pheasants, geese that run toward the sound of his boots in the barnyard. He guards their eggs hidden in the long grasses, sleeps outside at night with a gun tucked under his arms, shoots at anything that moves. He watches sports every night in a black lazy boy, fully reclined. He sits with the remote in his hand and switches back and forth between hockey and boxing, football and baseball. He pulls his lazy boy close up to the TV, presses his ear against the screen so he can hear the sound of a hockey puck zinging across the ice, jumps off his chair when a football cleaves into the hand of a running back, shouts, "Touchdown!" He keeps his pockets full, lifesavers, sticks of gum, broken toothpicks, a set of nail clippers, old Lotto 649 tickets with the numbers circled in pen, loose change, balled-up gum wrappers. He can never find his glasses, his wallet, his car keys. He drives off with piles of laundry on the hood of his car, forgets his 7-year-old son in a gas station washroom, drives back half an hour later and finds him balled up and crying on the bathroom floor. He always remembers birthdays and anniversaries, the exact time when the tufted heads of his kids crested his wife's birth canal. He can tell you when an egg will hatch, when a sow is sickly, when it's time to walk away from a crop of tomatoes. He knows how to build a fence line, clean a gun, remove porcupine quills from the snout of a dog. He sits you down on Remembrance Day, tells you about Gallipoli, Dieppe, how his own father, a bullet in his chest, ripped off his gas mask, sucked in the mustard gas, burned his lungs to shreds. He can sail a 60-foot boat into the dark maw of the Caribbean Sea, tie a tourniquet, break up a field with a disker. He is agnostic, anti-church, sings the last three lines of the Seafair, "Amen, amen, amen." He loves the open, an open window, an open field, the open arms of his children, the openness of Canada. He believes in freedom, democracy, capital punishment. He watches action movies, westerns, anything with Clint Eastwood and Charles Bronson. He intervenes in fights, gets black eyes, broken ribs. He likes money, but not saving it. Prefers the pull of a slot machine, the slap of cards in a blackjack game. He buys three of everything, 3 weed whackers, 3 hammers, 3 lawnmowers. He buys cars, forgets to change the oil, waits to the last minute to signal left, stops to pick up hitchhikers. He talks to anybody, doesn't drink, doesn't smoke. He goes to the grocery store, comes home with sticky buns and butter tarts, 3 of everything. He names his farm animals, splints their broken legs, constructs elaborate hoists and zip lines for pigs crushed and hobbled. He spends hours rubbing their bellies and ears, mutters, "Goddamn son of a bitch pigs," when he takes them to the abattoir. He always owns a dog. Dogs follow him everywhere, behind his tractor, into the barn, grocery stores, belly crawling up the aisles. He flies the Union Jack on July 1st, votes conservative, extols the dangers of communism when his son writes to Russian pen pals. He argues with him about everything, food, music, the way the world carves itself up. His son orates human rights, the hypocrisy of American policy, corporate greed. He says, "Hey son, want to play catch, shoot a puck?" "Not today, Dad," his son says. He packs away the hockey sticks, baseball gloves, studies his son instead, learns about his world, sends his spare change to Nicaragua, spends whole summers with his son jumping the waves of Sabo Beach, watching the same movies, talking about history, long past arguing, his world just a little more open. Slam shut when a detective comes to the door that chilled October morning, tells him that his son, his oldest child, Kurt, named after Kurt Ayers, that southern boy from South Carolina who gave him those dog tags so long ago, is dead. Gets old, gets sick, his heart falters. He talks to his dead son about what's wrong with American policy, burns the Union Jack, votes NDP, and when his dog can no longer eat, lays his 80-year-old body down on the cold basement floor beside him. "You can't go too, not you too." He rubs his dog's ears, "There, there, boy," when the dog has a seizure. "Easy, boy," as he walks him around and around the yard, until even he, this 5-pound, 6-ounce baby, now grown into an old man, this runner, this farmer, this fighter, this father who lost his son, his oldest child named after that southern boy from South Carolina who gave him his dog tags, cannot save his dog, the dog who followed him behind his tractor, and the dog just drops and stiffens on the grass, and the man does not move, just sits for a time under the willow tree in the hot August afternoon and thinks about his dog.
That was A Man and a Dog, written and read by Laura Lush. This concludes Life Rattle number 1304. My name is Laurie Callis. I recorded Natalie and Laura reading their stories. Life Rattle was created by Arnie Ackman and Guy Allen. Be sure to tune in next week for new stories written and read by Jessica Zurawicki.